because Paulo Moniz are talking about new borders for quantum gravity.
Okay, so this is a talk on supersymmetric quantum cosmology. This is a subject that took some interest in the late 80s with Peter Diet and other persons mainly. Then it stalled for a little bit. Then in the mid 90s, again, quite some developments took place where I hope to say that I contributed. And then it stalled for a little bit, and then in the mid part of the last decade, in 2004, 2005, some new developments, mainly also in collaboration with Klaus Kiefer, took place. So the main idea of quantum cosmology with supersymmetry, and let's see if I can find the laser pointer, it's here. So this is just a lecture note of physics published by Springer Verlag, two volumes. So you can find most of information there. So I'll just mention here and there some references. So the basic idea of supersymmetric quantum cosmology is that as you go backwards in time towards, say, the mentioned Big Bang, so the singularity, it is not enough just to use plain standard quantum cosmology, say the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. You have to take into account all bunch of symmetries, namely supersymmetries, if you want to take into account unification theory. So this means that when you describe the early universe, the Wheeler-DeWitt equation somehow, in some manner, must include supersymmetry. So that's basically, in general terms, the idea. There are many ways to try to approach this. So this is perhaps the simplest approach, which actually was developed by Robert Graham, or employed by Robert Graham in the late mid-late 90s, which in a sense uses the ideas of supersymmetric quantum mechanics that were proposed by Edward Witten to describe supersymmetry breaking. So it is just a bit of a toy model, but the general idea here is a little bit like an end-zone and ad hoc approach. But it works quite interesting. The idea basically is that you pick up some bosonic configuration. It can be general relativity, it can be some Brans-Dickey, some bosonic set of a string theory, something like that. Then what you do is you choose a metric for your space-time. So this is just a generic Bianchi metric. So this means metrics in cosmology, scenarios in cosmology that can include isotropy and spatial anisotropy. And then you just parameterize in a useful way. So this is just the usual Milner parameterization, which when the betas are, these terms are not present, there you just have the usual Friedman-Robertson-Walker model. So what does this consist then? You produce the Hamiltonian formulation. So this is standard ADM. So that's basically the idea. You pick up the kinetic terms and the potential. So for Bianchi 1 is the simplest case that you can use because the potential is already zero. So this is perhaps the model that has been most employed in this case. And there are others more interesting, like the Bianchi 9 here, which was perhaps the main motivation of Robert Graham because he wanted to study the mixed master, the chaotic issues, from a supersymmetric angle, using what I'm going to show to you in a moment. And then you ask yourself if you can put here some hidden supersymmetry. So the idea here is that let's pick up the potential that was mentioned indicated in the previous slide, and you ask if you can find a solution to this equation. So this is a bit like assuming an Hamilton-Jacobi equation that you can get from the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. In this case, so I'm jumping a few steps here, in the sense that you are considering a Euclidean time, and this is just Euclidean acting. So this is the Witt metric for your mini superspace here, in the sense of the space of all the configuration variables that describe the evolution of your space-time scale factors, scalar fields, so on. So you can solve that equation for very simple models. The obvious one is the Bianchi one, for obvious reasons, and you have actually exact solutions for that equation for other types of potential, for other types of Bianchi models, including, namely here, the Bianchi 9, what was the interesting to address by Robert Graham. So then what you do is, okay, now let me rewrite again my Hamiltonian, still purely classical, and then let me rewrite in this way for the quantum Hamiltonian. So you are already seeing there some structure that is being put by hand. So you don't know yet what are these S and S tilde or S bar, but you can already guess what they will become. So the idea is that you are using operator that satisfies these constraints and these requirements, and then the way they are written is precisely like this. So they behave like supercharges or supersymmetry constraint or supersymmetry generators in the way that now you have present here the solutions of that previous equation before. So what plays the role of a superpotential? Actually, there are, you can relate supersymmetry quantum mechanics with some limit of supersymmetric field theory. So this is perhaps the idea that was behind the aim of Edward Witten in writing that paper. And you can use perhaps simpler cases where the Witt metrics or the metric of your mini superspace in terms of quantum cosmology is entirely flat. If it's not flat, you need to use these requirements. But then you can see there the additional new fields, the additional new terms that are put there by hand. Again, I'm saying this quite in order to be quite honest about it, which are, say, they are just Grassmann variables which will play the role of fermions put, and again, by hand in these structures in a way that they satisfy these requirements. So you are producing n equals 2 supersymmetry quantum mechanics, but with a very specific ingredient, that is, your Hamiltonian is from a GR or a setting in the sense that it has time reparametrization invariant. So that's supersymmetry quantum cosmology built, I emphasize this word, built this way. So then you can write your supersymmetric Hamiltonian, or in this case the Euler-de-Witt term, with this additional term that comes here from the presence of the Grassmann variables, and this will be the new terms that will produce the new effects. You can now solve this equation, and you can solve those constraints that are the analogous to the supersymmetry constraints, but I will not do this here because I'm going now to the other approach, which is perhaps more top-bottom and perhaps more fundamental. So the idea here is a little bit different, and the results will be a little bit different. And the way to put them together and to make a correspondence between both of them is still an open issue. So the idea here is you make a reduction of, say, your action of four-dimensional n equals 1 supergravity. You have to choose wisely, in a sensible way, the answers for your fields. You can, say, consider the Friedman models, which are the simplest, but there are works that use Bianchi models. So, in a way, this is perhaps more safe because you are using a theory that is well known, at least theoretically, and you are trying to produce quantum cosmological consensus from it. So, now, what you need to do is find an adequate answer for your fields, which satisfy supersymmetry, Lorentz invariance, as well as the general coordinate transformation, which will become, in terms of quantum cosmology, just the time reparametrization invariance. So the idea is to get a mini superspace, again, superspace in the sense of quantum cosmology, in the sense of Meissner, Thorne, Wheeler, that is described in that famous book, that will inherit these types of symmetries. Okay, so this is a very simple model, no matter, and the only element, the only content that is present there will be, say, the metric, or in this case, because we are using a two-spinner notation, it will be the tetrad, written in this way. And you take for the gravitinus masses, there is no supersymmetry breaking, you take them in a way that they have to satisfy the supersymmetry transformations. It turns out that the simplest, and I emphasize simplest, easiest solution is to truncate the gravitinus in this way. So they are reduced to a product of the tetra towards a spin 1/2 term. This is one way to do it. If you take an isotropic configuration, so Bianchi 9 models, you can be more bold, more audacious. So this is how it works in Friedman model for a very simple, and precise, simple model without any matter. You can put matter, but things will become more complicated. So what then you do? You put your answers in your four-dimensional action and you integrate over the spatial hypersurfaces. In this case, you are taking your hypersurfaces as free spheres. You integrate them, and then what you get is a mini superspace in the sense of quantum cosmology, but that it has n equals 4 supersymmetries. Oh, so capital A and capital A prime in terms of two-spinner notations vary between O and 1, and O prime and then 1 prime. So the point here is that you are already seeing that between the previous approach and this approach, one gives n equals 2, the other n equals 4. And let me just say that in trying to build by hand n equals 4 supersymmetry quantum cosmology is still an issue. It has not yet been done in the way that you can get this.
So this is the action you can get. Fine. Then you can rewrite your Hamiltonian. You find that there are terms that are simply Lagrange multipliers, and from them you get a full set of constraints in a simplified manner. So this is just the usual Wheeler-DeWitt from which you will regain your Wheeler-DeWitt equation, and then you get these two additional supersymmetry constraints. So two here, and this is just your Lorentz constraints. So now you try to attempt to solve this. This is a very simple model, again, and then what you do is you take one possible approach. That possible approach is that every canonical momentum is replaced by a derivative of the corresponding conjugate variable. So for the fermions, you know you have to differentiate in terms of Grassmann variables. So this is why it is quite complicated and time-consuming for more complicated models to deal with this approach. And then you get the supersymmetry constraints in this way as well as the Lorentz constraint. One possible way to satisfy the Lorentz constraint is this ANSA. So you have an entirely bosonic term and another term that is associated to this fermionic field sector. If you have more fields, you can get the wave function in this sense of the Lorentz invariance much more complicated. So if you substitute this equation in these constraints, then you get these equations to solve, and this is what you get. So in the end, for this very simple model without any math, no cosmological constant, anything, you get these solutions, which actually correspond, for example, to the Arthur-Hawking solution, in this case when b equals zero. So the test here is that how can you get this as a realistic sense? Still, you can get. But the point is that you can get from the solutions in this structure solution that exists in strictly bosonic quantum cosmology. So can it be real? So can this be worked out? So I will not go through all of this. So I have this quite, this is just two more slides. You can now go to more audacious structures. So this means getting more scale, putting a scalar field, or making perturbations in terms of the tetrad or of the gravitino to get something out of it. So WKB approach some solution. This is something that I did with Klaus Kiefer. The results are quite interesting, but let me just go directly to the last slide. And the point is that it is interesting that from those results and what is still remain to do, that we can hope to make SQC, so namely supersymmetric quantum cosmology, with some observational insight. Something in the same lines that of making also quantum cosmology with some observational insight. There are also other open problems, namely, can it be suitably included, the supermatter in this structure? One cannot even yet know, but this is an open problem, if you can put a cosmological constant in a Bianchi 9, can you get suitable solutions? So it is technically quite complicated then to solve all these equations. And of course, there is the issue of supersymmetry breaking, because this is something that has not yet been addressed in terms of this framework. And that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Questions? I had a question, actually. You said when you went from four to one dimension, you had the spatial sections were S3s.
You can take flat. So you can,
yeah, but I was wondering, in that case, why do you preserve all your supersymmetries?
It comes that when you have your final mini superspace, so when you go to your reduced action and you get the constraints that are written in your reduced action, you still have the spinorial indexes and you still have those psi a naught and psi I naught prime.
I understand. But normally, when you compactify on S3, you would think that you break your supersymmetry. It's not a torus. Is what I'm saying.
No, this is so. Yeah. Basically, you get that in your reduced action, or so your reduced Hamiltonian, or then in your on this, because I didn't write it explicitly, you get terms that are dependent on all terms that have no derivative there, so they are Lagrange multipliers. So then you can make them explicitly the algebra, and they satisfy an algebra, and they have transformation for the fields under this supposedly generators that prove that they are indeed generators of supersymmetry. This is, I can point to you the work by David Hughes and the others, 1994 or something like that. It's time-consuming calculation.
Anyone has thought about any more questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.